tattoos were once associated with rebelliousness and danger, sailors, gang members, and prostitutes. It's Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is away. And we're talking about tattoos this hour because in recent years, tattoos have become positively trendy. Bankers, teenagers, and soccer moms alike adorn their backs, hips, and biceps. And whether it's a fire-breathing dragon, your boyfriend's name in a little heart, or a feel-good Chinese character, tattoos affect the way people, both in the workplace and out, perceive you. Do you have a tattoo? Has it changed the way people see you? And do you have a tattoo you regret? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the hour, we'll have the latest on the bridge collapse in Minnesota. But first, living with tattoos. Paul Rowe is a tattoo artist and historian and owner of British Ink Tattoo Studio and Gallery here in Washington, D.C. He joins us here in Studio 3A. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Let me ask you, who are your customers? Who's getting tattoos?
In Washington, D.C., it's a very diverse market. Everybody from students to military professionals, lobbyists, it runs the gamut, really.
And what do you think is the appeal? What brings them to you?
I truly believe that the appeal is innately human. It's a very primeval instinct to want to decorate the body.
And yet it's such a permanent way to do so.
Absolutely. Irreversible decisions are good for the soul.
Words to live by. Have you seen a difference in your clientele in the last few years?
Strangely enough, no. Washington is very transient as a city, and you see the faces are different, but the people are basically the same.
Do you get more business when it's a Democratic administration versus a Republican?
I really don't
you
think
haven't,
there's any
you
difference
haven't tracked
at all.
That data?
No, I don't. I really don't think there's any difference.
So what do you think, give me some of the reasons that people give you for wanting a tattoo.
There are memorial tattoos where somebody is looking to commemorate the life of a lost loved one, a pet even. There are the tattoos are totemic, where somebody wishes to take on the characteristics of, say, a mountain lion or a dragon or another strange creature. They identify with that and wish to express that spirit through the decoration on their skin. Community, to belong to a tribe. Ultimately, that's what we are, a tribe of human beings. And as humans, we like to quantify and break the tribe up into smaller tribes. Even within the heavily tattooed industry, there are those that have purely black tribal work and those that have purely Japanese work and those that have the old school American traditional tattooing and will only get that specific type of tattooing. Each to their own. It really is a matter of personal taste.
And do you have regular clients? I mean, is your signature specific enough that people say, I want a Paul Rowe?
Absolutely. I do have a regular client base. I would say 50% of my work is from referrals. And really, that's the best way to find a good artist, is to see art, healed, finished tattoos on somebody of a quality, of a style that you like, and inquire as to where they got that. And word of mouth is crucial in this business. It's all reputation. Every single piece, regardless of the size, regardless of the imagery, every single tattoo that I apply has to be treated as though it was going to be tattooed on myself. And with as much respect, regardless of the size, regardless of the imagery, each tattoo requires its own individual attention.
Well, with that kind of standard, have you ever tried to talk someone out of a tattoo?
Yes, yeah, frequently.
Really?
People will come in with blown up ideas. The skin is an amazing medium to work with. There's a very finite amount of detail that can be achieved over time. The longevity of a tattoo, now bearing in mind permanence, it's on you till you're dust. It must be structured so that in 20, 30 years' time, as the skin ages and loses its elasticity, there will be migration of pigment through the skin. The image should be of a detail level that will hold up to that, that will accommodate for the aging skin process. And in 20 years' time, quite frankly, I hope to still be tattooing, and I still want people to send referrals to me based on the work that was done decades ago.
Let's hear from Mary in Sacramento. Mary, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
You're on
the
air.
Can you hear
me? Yeah, we can.
Okay, good. I could barely hear you. Well, I'm 51, and I didn't get my first tattoo until my early 40s because I let people talk me out of it when I was in my teens and my early 20s. And I finally realized that I really did want one, and I wanted one that represented who I was. So my first one was on my inside right ankle, and then I got my second one a few years later on my left shoulder, and I'm about to get my third, and like I said, I'm now 51.
And Mary, what are they?
The one on the inside of my ankle is actually a cat face, a kitty face. And again, I chose what really represents who I am. Over the years, I've rescued animals, all different kinds, but cats, I tend to be a cat magnet is what my daughter calls me. They find their way to me. And I have five right now of my own, and so I got the little kitty face. And then on my shoulder is a paw print on the front of my left shoulder, and then three paw prints going down the back, as if they're literally walking over me, figuratively and literally. And the third one I'm planning on getting is the Chinese symbol, and I've had this verified by someone from China, for tranquility. And I'm not, the reason I've hesitated so far of getting it is I'm not exactly sure where I'm going to put it yet. And it's interesting because I'm in a very, very conservative business, a financial industry, and so I very carefully place them on my body where I can cover them up.
How do you cover the one on the inside of your ankle?
Long pants. Mm-hmm. I don't have to wear skirts or dresses. And the inside of the ankle, the reason I went with inside instead of outside is because it's just not as visible. Mm-hmm. But again, they really represent who I am. And the advice I give people who want to get a tattoo, especially young people, is first of all, put it someplace, your first one, where you can cover it up. And second of all, really make it something that represents who you are. I asked the tattoo artist who was doing mine what he thought of this 40-something woman coming in getting her first tattoo. And he thought it was very cool because I was getting something that really represented who I was and not just something that was trendy and popular to do that I might regret down the road.
Mary, thanks for your call. I think we hear a lot of people say one tattoo is not enough. Paul Rowe, do you think they're addictive to some degree?
Well, I think that they are the milestones on the journey that is life. You go down that road, something will happen, an event will happen, you wish to commemorate, you may, be it joyous or otherwise. And at that point in time, you make a decision, you get a tattoo. Forevermore, you will look back at that permanent mark on your skin and remember where you were in your life at that point in time. And the idea of a control position being in placed on the body where you have the control as to whether or not you wish to show it or not, is something to be considered. Public skin, such as the back of hands, neck, facial tattooing, requires a very specific personality in order to carry that off in everyday social life. Can be quite a stigma, especially in this country.
We're joined now by Molly Selvin. She's an LA Times staff writer and author of the LA Times article, Better Hide the Tattoo If You Want the Job. She joins us from her studios in Culver City, California. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Rebecca. It's really great to be here.
So you interviewed both employers and employees for your article. Is what Paul Rowe is saying about the visible parts of your body where you can't cover it up ringing true to you?
Yes, absolutely. I interviewed a number of employees in a variety of professions and also a number of bosses, sometimes the boss of the person I interviewed. And there's been some survey data that's out there now on tattoos, and some dermatologists, for example, from the University of Chicago and Northwestern published a survey last year, and they found that most people tend to cover their tattoos up at work, more women than men, which goes along with what Mary said, which I find interesting.
Because of what they're worried having a tattoo will connote in the workplace?
Yeah, they're worried about it. There are some generational differences that I found, and that, I think, is what's really interesting to me. And those generational differences towards body art, tattooing, and piercing as well play out in the workplace, no surprise. Many baby boomers are now in positions where they hire people, and they may be, as a group, less enamored of tattoos and piercings than younger people who tend to have more tattoos and body piercings. But they don't want to lose out on really promising employees. And so there's this tension now in many workplaces about whether to allow tattoos and what kind of tattoos to allow.
Let's hear from Maureen in San Jose. Maureen, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. I had to agree with the last person. That was just my feeling about tattoos. My husband was a plastic surgeon, my late husband, and he used to tell me how sad it was for the patients who came in and wanted to have these tattoos removed, and it was going to be a very painful, expensive job, and it wasn't even going to give a good result. And the other thing is, my son just videoed me on YouTube, which was on yesterday, where I'm talking about how horrible tattoos are. And in fact, I've bribed my grandchildren to make sure they do not get tattoos or body piercings.
And have they taken you up on it?
Absolutely.
Maureen,
I guess that's one way to make sure your kids don't do it, or your grandchildren.
Maureen, thanks for your call. Paul Rowe, have you ever had to deal with an irate parent?
Few and far between. It depends on how you structure your business. I will say this, though, that you reap what you sow. And regrets down the line are the result of ill research, poor decisions made. If a decision is given consideration, if the research that you do before you get your tattoo, where you go, who you select to apply this, and more importantly, how you take care of it after the procedure until it's fully healed, and how you weather it in the sun, how you generally take care of your skin in general, will lead to very few poor decisions if the research is put in, if you as a potential tattoo client actually put some thought into it, the chances of it being less applicable to you in 10 years' time are greatly reduced.
We're talking about tattoos this hour. If you've got the remains of a disastrous romance hanged on your arm, give us a call, 800-989-TALK. And coming up, we'll talk to a doctor who can remove the evidence. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington, filling in for Neil Conan. Tattoos have spread from the barroom to the boardroom, and we're talking about those fairies, bald eagles, dragons, any other flying objects that might grace or mar your hip bones, depending on how you feel about it. Our guests are Paul Rowe. He's a tattoo artist and historian and owner of British Ink Tattoo Studio and Gallery in Washington, D.C., as well as L.A. Times staff writer Molly Selvin. And you're invited to join the conversation. Go ahead and confess what's written on your body. Do you love it do you regret it? Like Melissa in La Crosse, Wisconsin, who writes in to say, I have a tattoo I regret. I got it on my 18th birthday. A great piece of advice I got after the one I regret was pick something and hang it on your fridge for 6 months. And if you still want it after that, you may have less of a chance of regret. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK or email us at talk@npr.org. Check out our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Paul Rowe, I know that you tend to do sort of larger, more artistic works, but what sort of cost are we talking about? How much does an average tattoo cost?
The average tattoo depends on the person applying it and the marketplace, basically. I mean, the same size tattoo at any given studio in New York City is going to cost you differently from Florence, South Carolina.
And when you see clients' tattoos from another artist, do you sometimes know whose work they are?
Yes, definitely. Yeah? There are many very, very talented artists that have their own particular style. It's identifiable. Some people identifiable from blocks away.
Let's take a call from Amanda in our... I'm sorry, that's not Amanda. Let's take a call from Amanda in Cadiz, Kentucky. Did I say that right? Are you in Cadiz, Kentucky?
Yes, Cadiz, Kentucky.
Cadiz.
Yes, Western Kentucky, close to Nashville.
Good afternoon.
I got my tattoo 20 years ago. I was fresh in college. I was 18 years old and very naive. And my friend Brian and I got on his motorcycle, and we went to our tattoo parlor, which was run by a host of bikers who were, you know, in full biker regalia. I mean, I did very little research on it. I just knew that I had to have this Rolling Stones logo on my hip, and I was going to do anything to get it. And at this point, I'm a 40-year-old mother of three, and still holding up pretty well, I guess, as well as the Rolling Stones have held up over the years. But regretfully, no, I don't regret having it. When I look at it, it really puts me back into that time of my life, and when I start taking myself too seriously, I remember getting on that bike that fall day and going to get that tattoo, and then having to tell my father about it. But
and Amanda, how did a tattoo on your hip hold up during pregnancy?
Actually, great. I actually went through a twin pregnancy, and it's fine. The red part needs to be filled in. I think I always consider going and having it worked on. But when I tell people I've got this Rolling Stones tattoo and it it needs a little work, they say, considering Mick Jagger's mouth, it works. It's worked well for me over the years, so I don't regret it at all.
Do you think tattoos have gotten artier since then?
Oh gosh, yes. When we went, there were your typical roses and butterflies and my friend got a tattoo of Calvin, from Calvin and Hobbes. That at that point was a huge stretch for that fella to have to reproduce, and he was kind of grousing about it. The Rolling Stones were that was easy, but yes, very much so. I see. I'm an associate professor, and I see my students coming in with what look to be photographs implanted on their skin, and it's hard to believe that they've evolved that much. And back when I did it, it was rather scandalous. But still, people thought it was kind of cool. So.
Amanda, thanks for your call. Do you have actually better tools to make better pictures, Paul Rowe, or is it just creativity explored beyond something like a Rolling Stones logo?
Well, the tools themselves haven't changed. The tattoo machine, a twin coil, electromagnetic coil tattoo machine, is essentially the same in its construction as the first machine was patented in 1899 by an Englishman, Alfred South, and the machine hasn't changed. What has changed is the technology in producing things like needles, needle groupings, the way in which an artist puts together the composition, the layout, the flow on the body, all accentuate the element, the visual element, if it's in harmony with the structure. And I view it very much that you see the image in context of the framework being an arm or a shoulder. If the image is fluid and conforms to the muscle structure and to the flow of the body, it will have a much more visual appeal. However, what has changed in the last 20 years is those artists coming into the business that have had classical art training, that have gone through Sketch 101 and way beyond. So they can apply the same techniques as they would use in constructing a painting or a sculpture, for that matter, any other artistic medium, into the medium of skin.
Does it hurt?
Does it hurt? No, it doesn't hurt. It's irritating. I have to say it's irritating more than it is painful. It depends on the site, the placement on the body, the number of nerve endings in that area. So somewhere, say, the inner forearm is considerably less sensitive than, say, the rib cage.
And is that different on men and women, the sensitive spot?
Yes, yes. Women physically have fewer nerve endings, and they are distributed completely differently from men.
Huh.
The lower back tattoo is very, very common for placement for a woman. It's very easy for a woman to take a tattoo in that area, generally speaking. Now, generally speaking, every single tattoo is different because everybody's skin is totally unique and individual to that person. Identical twins, identical tattoos, identical placements, they both felt it differently.
And Molly Selvin, as you've been talking to people in the workplace, are there either places on the body that are more or less controversial or content that is more or less controversial?
Well, employment lawyers tell me that companies have a wide latitude to decide what kind of grooming standards they want to set, whether they want tattoos at all, what kind of tattoos. But generally speaking, the employers that I talked to said they all drew the line at something that they considered to be offensive, either kind of gory or racist or sexist, partly because they feared liability, but also because they feared offending customers. So that in most places where I talked to people, there was that line. They didn't want anything that somebody would recoil at.
And what about employees who are let go for having tattoos? Do they have any legal recourse?
No, because you're not. It's not a protected category like race or gender or disability. So if an employee does, if an employer decides, if your boss decides that you, as I understand it, if you don't, if they don't want to have tattoos visible in the workplace, and you're not willing to abide by that, you could be gone.
Molly Sullivan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Molly Sullivan is an LA Times staff writer and author of the article Better Hide the Tattoo If You Want the Job. She joined us today from our studios in Culver City, California. And we're joined now by Eric Bernstein. He's the director of Laser Surgery and Cosmetic Dermatology Centers and clinical associate professor of dermatology at the University of Pennsylvania. He joins us from the studios of WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we've talked some about who's getting tattoos. Who's getting tattoos removed?
Just about everybody. Same people that are getting them put on are getting them removed. You know, it's very hard to predict what you're going to want to live with. I thought that refrigerator advice, putting something up for 6 months, is very good advice.
And what are some of the reasons you hear from people wanting to get rid of their tattoos?
Well, the most common reason is a loved one's name who's no longer a loved one.
Yeah, I will interject there, Eric. I do have a clause. I do not tattoo names unless it's blood.
Oh, really?
If it's your mother, your father, your offspring, of course. If it's anyone else, choose something that reminds you of them, not their name.
So
the reasons are as varied. For getting them off is for getting them on. You know, I grew tired of that picture. Work related. I'm working with a teacher now who feels that his tattoo is pretty scary to little kids, and he wants it off.
And what is involved in tattoo removal? What's the process?
Well, the process, and by the way, I think we all have the same nerve endings. I just think in my practice, women seem to be tougher than the men. The men feel pain. I like to think we have more nerve endings, but I'm a doctor, so I know we're just not as tough. But what's involved is usually we numb the area with a needle, with Novocaine, and then a laser is applied which sees the tattoo ink. So immediately when you watch the procedure, it looks like the tattoo is disappearing. And then about 15 minutes later, it looks kind of just like the way it did when they came in, but it's irritated. And over the next 6 weeks, the inflammation that's created, as well as rupturing the particles into smaller pieces, causes your body to take the tattoo away through the lymphatic system. So it's a gradual disappearance, and it does take, on average for a professional tattoo, 6 to 12 treatments.
Are there certain colors that are harder than others to get out?
No doubt about it. Orange is very difficult to get out, and green. So often you'll see
just
during
because
removal,
the frequencies, I mean, or the dye that's used, what makes them harder?
That's a great question. It is the dye that's used. Normally you pick a color of light that's going to be taken up by the tattoo. But the other problem we have is we don't really know what's in all the tattoo inks. They're not regulated. So at any one time, you know, you're lasering a tattoo, you have no idea what's in those inks. Black is fairly easy to remove because black, if you've walked outside on a hot summer day, you know that black absorbs light because it burns your feet. So black takes up every laser light, and it's probably the easiest color to get out.
And what are you left with after it's removed?
Well, if you do it right, if I do it right, you're left with normal skin where you can't see the tattoo at all. And that's really what should happen if it's done properly. I mean, occasionally there's colors that are stubborn. You can see a halo, for example. But the key is having all the right equipment. It often takes more than one laser to get a tattoo completely out. Sort of like with an antibiotic where, you know, it can become resistant to a given, you know, bacteria. When we're lasering a tattoo, it can become resistant to a certain color laser. And the key is to switch to a different laser. If people only have one, they may turn it up, in which case you don't want to turn the laser too high because then you can hurt the skin and make a scar.
Let's hear from Anne in Jacksonville. Anne, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to comment. My husband, he has a tattoo of the Lorax, the Dr. Seuss character, on his upper arm, and he got it in his early 20s, and he's now 38, and he went through a period of regret there about it, but now I think, you know, we have little children, and I think he kind of uses it as a reminder to keep that ideology, you know, in his head when we're raising our kids and think about, you know, have the environment in your mind, and, you know, it's a, you know, just that constant reminder that you want to pass it on to them instead of passing on the regret about it, you know.
And Anne, how is it looking? Is it holding up pretty well?
Oh, it's a little faded. He didn't get, like, the best job done, you know. He did it on a whim. But, you know, it's definitely recognizable. And, you know, my son, who's two, you know, he whenever he sees the book, he's like, Daddy?
somewhere, so. Anne, thanks so much for your call. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Paul Rowe, as a tattoo artist, can you tell when someone's there on a whim and might regret it tomorrow? Have you sometimes told people to come back in a week?
Well, my process involves initial contact through email or through telephone call, and then the setting up of a consultation.
And in they're that, not just walking in.
No, they're not just walking in. In that consultation, you really look at the reasons why they want to do this, the elements that they brought you, and ways in which you could structure and apply this to make it the best possible tattoo that they could get. That's custom tattooing. When you, let's define a term here. When you walk into a tattoo shop and you look and you see all of those pictures up on the walls, that's termed flash. That's stock imagery that is available for anybody. Working in street shops with that is a walk-in situation. People oftentimes come in, browse the racks, see a design that they like, maybe get it straight away, or go away, come back, look again, see that image, approach the artist, and oftentimes the artist will take that image and redo it and to draw it slightly differently so that it isn't a cookie-cutter style. Custom tattooing, however, on the other hand, is akin to having a tailor-made suit, where you'd walk in, get measured, these are your requirements, this is the style that you wish to achieve, and the image is structured individually for you and not repeated.
And what sort of training do you go through to become a tattoo artist? Are there different levels?
Traditionally, apprenticeship. It is an apprentice-driven industry and has been for thousands and thousands of years, where you show your loyalty, you work, and it's often unpaid, and you clean and you make needles and you scrub and you clean and you make needles and you make stencils. And then maybe a year or two down the line, if you're lucky, they'll teach you the way around a tattoo machine. At that point, you are still an apprentice. I certainly wouldn't consider myself a master at all, a journeyman at best, and I've been tattooing for 9 years. So there's just way too much information to learn in order to master the craft, and those that have mastered the craft have been in this business for at least 25 years.
Let's hear from Mark in Seattle. Mark, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Hello.
I was just going to make a comment. I have about 70% of my body covered in tattoos, and I work at a bank.
Rock on.
What's that?
Rock on, sir. Rock on.
To be honest, I don't have to deal with customers every day, but I do deal with customers, and I find I have tattoos on my hands, on my neck, and they're more interested than shocked. And another comment I had was I more view myself as a collector of art than anything. I have a back piece that took me 75 hours to complete.
Who's the artist on the back piece there?
His name is Micah Sahowitz.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I don't know, I just view it as art. There's not that many of my tattoos that actually have personal meaning to me. Most of them are just...
What's the big one on your back, Mark?
It is a... it's an original drawing, but it's inspired by Faust, the artist Faust. And most of my tattoos are kind of demon or dark like that. But I just think it's all art, and I don't think they have to, they don't have to mean anything personal.
Mark, thanks for your call. And Dr. Bernstein, have you seen people come in to get something removed because they want to start again? They're trying to sort of go for a blank canvas?
Oh, absolutely. One of the worst things I deal with is people that cover up tattoos with second tattoos. I'd much rather see them get it removed by laser and then start over. So, yeah, that's fairly common.
Well, the problem there is in going into covering up an existing tattoo, you have to be exceptionally skilled to be able to pull it off. And quite frankly, there are not enough people out there with the skills to be able to do that. And getting it partially lightened will help a great deal in covering up and applying a fresh piece of art to your skin.
Dr. Bernstein, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Bernstein is the Director of Laser Surgery and Cosmetic Dermatology Centers and Clinical Associate Professor of Dermatology at the University of Pennsylvania. You can visit his website at www.dermguy.com. He joined us from WCAI in Woods Hole. Coming up, more with tattoo artist Paul Rowe. And then the bridge collapse in Minneapolis raises questions about the structural soundness of other bridges. We've got answers from bridge experts after the break. It's Rebecca Roberts, Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now we're talking about tattoos with tattoo artist and historian Paul Rowe. He's the owner of British Ink Tattoo Studio and Gallery in Washington, D.C. And let's take a call. This is OJ in Athens, Ohio. OJ, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. I have several tattoos. I enjoy them, and I've always taken my time picking them out, and I'm quite happy with them. But I've been hearing little things about, like, ointments that would supposedly take, you know, remove a tattoo, or supposedly inks that are, like, semi-permanent, and I was just wondering if Paul knows anything about those, if it's anything safe even.
Well, the tattoo lies in the dermis, so you've got to go through the epidermis and then partially through the dermis, for argument's sake, the second layer of skin. So any topical creams need to penetrate down and then break up the pigment, and we just don't have the technology to make those at the moment. So in my humble opinion, bunk to all of that. The subject of a semi-permanent ink has been in the works for a couple of years. To my understanding, it is a dye, which is separate from a pigment. A dye at a molecular level still has the color. A pigment is a crystalline structure which refracts light and therefore gives off color. A dye encapsulated in a polymethacrylate, an acrylic sphere, to which the exterior is a silicon dioxide, a glass, is applied to the outside. Now, the theory goes that a specific wavelength of laser will rupture these, and the dye, which is soluble in the body, will then be flushed away by the body system. It's in testing. The patent is out. I'm very dubious.
Why are you dubious?
What becomes of the debris that's left over? Billions and billions of shrouds of tiny pieces of plastic and glass. Do you have crunchy skin after that? I cannot see this working. And also, the physics, in the application process, you have needles, steel needles, thrashing against the steel tip tube. It's enough to wear the tip of the tube. How is it going to apply to the individual particles which are wrapped in little balls of plastic and silicon dioxide? They're just going to get smashed to pieces. I really cannot see how it would work. It's very experimental at the moment. I'd go as far as to say hypothetical.
I think we have time for one more call. This is John in Sacramento. John, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I tend to think that tattoos are largely about self-expression, which is something like we normally applaud, but for some reason with the stigma that's attached to these things, that just doesn't hold true. And I just wanted to comment, there's an old adage in the community that the difference between people who have tattoos and people who don't is that the people who have tattoos don't care if you have tattoos or not.
Absolutely, yeah, I've heard that many a time.
John, thanks for your call. Do you think there's still a stigma? Is it changing?
It fluctuates, and if you historically look at it, the aristocracy in the Victorian period, tattoos were all the rage. If you had the money to do the grand tour, to do the empire, go out to Hong Kong, go out to Japan, what did you bring back? You brought back a tattoo. And it showed that you had the wealth and the means to do this. Very popular. However, falls off during the First, Second World War, comes back into popularity with the flower child. Hippie revolution, it's self-expression, it's individuality expressed on the skin, MTV, the basketball teams, sports players, and all the way up to TV shows. And it ebbs and flows. Tattooing is not a trend. It's always been with us. There are trends within tattooing. But it has been with us for at least 6,000 years that we know of. And we have the Iceman was excavated in 1991. He's dated at 5,600 years old, and he's tattooed. We have Pazaric chiefs, 3,500 years old, mummified bodies, glorious tattoos with stags and leaping hares and tigers, almost a modern approach to the way in which they're laid out and placed on the skin. It's been with us forever. It's just ebbed in and out of popularity. And largely, the American culture is based on European culture and the immigrants from Europe. I am a firm believer that the prejudice against tattooing was brought with the early settlers, most of them with religious agendas. And I think that goes back to 325, Council of Nicaea, when Constantine outlawed tattooing as a pagan practice, actually outlawed penal tattooing of the face as a pagan practice.
And well, we've had a history lesson, an art lesson, yes, and a molecular lesson all from you today. Thank you so much, Paul Rowe.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you.
Paul Rowe is a tattoo artist and historian. He's the owner of British Ink Tattoo Studio and Gallery here in Washington. You can visit his website at www.paulrowe.com, and he joined us here in Studio 3A.